started. I think we have a quorum, and we'll get started on our show today, which is House File 3381. And members, you have in your packet, read everything. Bill, it's the DE2 bill. And I guess we'll ask Emily Cleveland to take us through that bill, walk us through it, and it was in there, and there's a couple of amendments in the packet. Maybe, Ms. Cleveland, if you go through, you can talk about what happens with the funding. We had to cut 2.31 from our bill, and we've done that.
Let me go through it.
Sure, go ahead. Madam Chair and members, then, Article 1 is the housing section, and it deals with the debt ceiling. It increases the total outstanding debt limits for the Housing Finance Agency by, I think, $2 billion, and it was in the governor's proposal that was presented to this committee earlier. Article 2 is the public health article, and on page 2, lines 19 to 25, this is where the reducing the positive alternatives appropriation each year, and this would leave $500,000 in the base for this program each year. The base level or base adjustment for the state government special revenue fund was in the governor's proposal. It has to do with expenditures for two different programs. And then subdivision 4, lines starting on line 231, is the 4% reduction in the administrative budget. That was also in the governor's proposal. Page 3, lines 1 to 10, this is language directing the Department of Health on how to cut some of the administrative cuts to 4%. Section 4, which starts on 311, is the health-related licensing board's some changes to their appropriations from the state government special revenue fund. This is also in the governor's proposal. Then, starting on page 4, sections 5 through 10, is language from House File 3812, which Representative Thiessen is carrying. It's the public pool safety bill. And this language is in the safe that the language from that House File 3812 is currently in after having gone through some of the committee process. So that goes through to page 10. On page 10, starting on line 23, there's language that would abolish two positions within the Department of Health, a deputy commissioner position and a assistant commissioner position. Section 12 on page 10 would require the Department of Health to consolidate two programs, Positive Alternatives and the Women's Right to Know, specifically requiring that the websites be consolidated into one. Section 13 is a revisor's instruction that is also language from House File 3812 having to do with the pool safety, updating the definition of public pool. Then starting on page 11 is Article 3, the Department of Human Services section. There are two appropriations here. One is at the bottom of the page for the food shelf program. That was a bill carried by Representative Benson. And then Section 4 on page 12 provides an appropriation for the long-term homeless supportive services, and that was a bill before this committee that Representative Reinhart was carrying. Angus Cleveland, I think there's just one correction maybe that I would point out, and that's the adjustment to the base business is actually 6% rather than 4.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The operating.
What was that?
The adjustment, the base adjustment is actually for the administration is actually 6%, the operating rather than 4. That's how we come up with some of the, part of how we come up with some of the additional funding.
Two thirty-two
on page 2. It's not 13%, but it just as the thing was like 2, she mentioned it before, and it goes. Okay, discussion from there are several amendments before us, and we'll just start going right. I guess we've got a couple people who requested to testify, and I think we only have one person actually. Called in to testify. Ms. Rao, you want to come forward? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Andrea Rao, and I represent Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life, MCCL. And I'd like to speak with you today about the Positive Alternatives Grant Program. I recognize that this committee has a very difficult decision to make as far as prioritizing budget items, but I would urge the committee on behalf of MCCL to reconsider the cuts that it is proposing related to the Positive Alternatives Program. 3 years ago, the Minnesota Legislature passed the Positive Alternatives Act. This program created a new grant program within the Minnesota Department of Health that is available to eligible organizations that provide support and services to pregnant women who want to bring their child to term. The types of support and services that are required under the program to be provided either by direct care or referral include medical care for both the mother and the child, nutrition services, housing assistance, adoption services, education and employment assistance, child care assistance, and parenting education and support services. Positive Alternatives passed with overwhelming bipartisan support, even bringing together a majority of both pro-life and pro-choice members in both legislative bodies. It passed the House by a vote of 112-17 and the Senate by a vote of 53-11. The first Positive Alternatives grants were awarded in July of 2006. That grant cycle has not yet been completed yet. As these grants are still ongoing, I have not seen statistics for them overall. However, I would like to share some information that a few of the grantees have provided. I'd like to just highlight a few of the items, and the committee members have further information on this that was distributed to them earlier. Lakota Life Care Center, which is located in South St. Paul, received a grant of just over $144,000 for a two-year cycle. With that money, they were able to hire 2 part-time client advocates or social work staff for their organization. And these advocates seek out resources beyond what is available to them through county services. One of the advocates is Spanish-speaking and serves as a translator as well. This is very important as Dakota County is unable to serve walk-in clients who need a translator, but Lakota Life Care is able to do that for them. In addition, the Lakota Life Care provides prenatal care coordination to ensure that women receive prenatal care, housing assistance, pregnancy testing, and support services for many women who are suffering from physical and chemical abuse. Over 1,000 people, 1,000 women have already been served through the Positive Alternatives Program at Lakota Life Care Center. Another organization that received a grant is based in Roseville that serves the entire state. It's called Cradle of Hope. They received one of the largest grants, as they are an organization that serves statewide. Their grant was $285,000. The focus of Cradle of Hope is to provide rent and housing assistance and also cribs for new mothers to ensure that their babies have a safe place to sleep, and helps greatly to reduce the incidence of SIDS. These options through Cradle of Hope are available only after all other options have been exhausted. Cradle of Hope is a resource of last resort for these women. Cradle of Hope in 2007 provided financial assistance to almost 1,200 women across the state. 555 of these were served through the Positive Alternatives Program. Of those 555 served through Positive Alternatives, 243 women received housing and or rent assistance, and 312 received new cribs, along with information from the Minnesota Department of Health on their Back to Sleep program to ensure the risks of SIDS were known. The demand for these grants is far greater than the current allocation of state funds, even withstanding the cuts that are being proposed by this committee. While 58 organizations initially applied for the funding, only 37 were awarded grants in the first round. Nearly all of the grantees have reapplied for funds. The next grant cycle begins on July 1st of this year. MCCL and the 77,000 member families and 241 chapters across Minnesota that we represent believe that Positive Alternatives is a life-changing, life-saving, and necessary program for the women, children, and families that are helped through this program. Additionally, we believe that Positive Alternatives is a wise investment for the state, saving millions of dollars by averting costly crisis situations for these women and their families. We urge you to give this program continued support at full funding. Thank you very much.
Okay. Can I ask a question? Is that
okay. We'll have very limited discussion. We'll go right ahead.
Okay, thank you. And the reason I'm asking the question is because I'm looking at the cuts that are having to be made of $3.5 million. It's basically coming from two programs. This program for $1.9 million and $1.6 million coming out of the health department. So I think it would be appropriate to say, ask the question, what's the remainder? What does this leave you with? And a cut of $1.9 million, what does that just decimate the program, or what's the impact?
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, I guess since the program is administered through the Department of Health, I can't say exactly what their decisions would be, but it would be my conclusion that this would really decimate the program. Indicated as well in the legislation is the combining of Women's Right to Know with Positive Alternatives, which would again take resources away from the program. I think it would be safe to say that for a program that we believe is already has a lack of funding and could certainly use more, it would be a very severe cut. We would be left with about $500,000 per year.
That was the second half of my question. How do those two organizations co-inhabitate?
Madam
and Women's Right to Know. How do you operate together?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I assume you mean Positive Alternatives and Women's Right to Know. Yeah, we're not directly, we helped to pass both of those pieces of legislation through the process. We strongly supported them. But at this period of time, we really are not affiliated with either program. They're both administered through the Department of Health. As far as how they both relate, I don't necessarily know what the committee's thought process was on why it was appropriate to combine the two of them. Women's Right to Know at this point is primarily administratively, I think, looking at making sure information is updated and those kinds of things, but I don't think there's a whole lot to the program that needs to be ongoing. Positive Alternatives being a grant program, obviously, is a very different story.
Okay. Maybe it's appropriate if I could come back to that same question later in our discussion as a committee in the thought process that brought those two together and the huge cut in this program.
I do, Madam Chair, if you'd like for me to hold off though until we hear Kelsey Fires, I'm fine with that too.
We have a few amendments to consider.
Okay.
Madam Chair, can I ask who this is from?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, it's from me.
Okay. It's not required in committee, just curious.
Thank you, Michelle. Okay.
Do you have any other people asked to testify? If there is, please let me know right now.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity to get together with you a little bit last week. I'm talking about this. We've kind of come forward as a minority and basically, you know, concurred with the governor's proposals on the cut. So we'll be looking at that. But I was wondering, we have a 6% cut, which was 2% more than what the governor had recommended on the Department of Health here. And I'm wondering if we can have them come forward and tell us how that's going to impact their ability to administer their department.
Yeah, there's a technical amendment I'd like to put on the bill before we go much further. I think we need to wait for that.
Do you want to have them come before?
Okay. Who would like to come from the Health Department too? Welcome to the committee.
And Madam Chair, if I may. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize.
Craig Akam, Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Health.
That's right. Could you, for us sitting on the committee, we know that this is a pretty huge bite for you to take out of your budget. Could you give us a quick synopsis of what your budget constitutes, both in terms of federal match funds and what a 6% cut is going to entail on your department?
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, thank you for the opportunity to talk about this tonight. In essence, as a quick overview of the Department of Health's budget, we have about a $450 million annual budget, of which $250 million is federal funds that we leverage on behalf of the state of Minnesota. Only about $80 million is general funds, and two-thirds of that goes out in grants. Of the remaining $25 million in general funds at the department, $8 million is dedicated directly to rent for the buildings that we sit in, leaving us with $17 million. That $17 million is basically the sum total of the flexible state money that we have that we can use to administer, oversee, provide match to the federal grants that we bring in the door. The other important use of that money is that it's also the only flexible pot of money that we have to address state needs that for which there is no federal money. For example, if we need to investigate a rabies case, or if we need to investigate an outbreak of an unknown disease at the Quality Pork Producers plant in Austin, or if we need to investigate water quality issues here in the metro, general funds are the source of money that we have available in order to meet those Minnesota-specific needs. And the challenge is that, and there's some other language in this bill that also requires that as we figure out how to make these reductions at the department, that we give priority to maintaining those federal funds. And certainly the federal funds are important to Minnesota, and we want to keep those. But what happens is it sets us in an imbalance where we have to prioritize maintaining the federal funds with the limited resources that are left. And we may not have the flexibility to address the Minnesota-specific needs for which there is no federal funding as a result. And as a result of having only basically the $17 million left, making a $1.7 million administrative reduction actually results in more of a 10% reduction to the department rather than a 6% reduction. And so it's a significant issue for us, and one that we wanted to highlight here tonight.
I picked up on this on the 10% discretionary money, but it goes beyond that. It says that money has to be cut from administrative expense. So that would be salaries, operating overhead, transportation, all administrative. So it's more significant than 10%. How do you do that?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, it would be challenging. We would need to have some time to figure out how to do that in the most thoughtful way we could.
Madam Chair, but it says it's salaries in administration. It is, you know, it's not for programs. And how many people do you have over there that you could cut $1.6 million out of your staff and travel expenses, which is $1 million? How do you do that? I still operate the program with the $9 million you have left.
Madam Chair, Representative Pearson, it's clearly a challenge of any sort of reduction scenario. And I do want to point out that in the governor's budget, we had recommended a $1.1 million administrative reduction, which we felt we would do through a careful analysis of vacancies and program reductions and possibly layoffs. And that was in the spirit of managing our fiscal responsibility in this tight budget times. This reduction is even more onerous than that, a 50% increase nearly, and would present even greater challenges for the department.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Thank you. In the governor's request for $1.1 million reduction, was that going to be restricted to admin expenses?
Madam Chair,
that have also been in program discretionary.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, maybe there's a definitional issue that I could clear up. When we talk about administrative operations, we are talking about the sum total of staff, program, operations, and oversight of programs that happens at the Department of Health versus, in essence, grant programs where money goes to our partners to implement the on-the-ground public health initiatives. So administrative operation reductions includes salaries and staff of individuals, managers, supervisors, technical, professional, and clerical staff that administer and provide expertise and oversight and guidance to all of our public health programs administered out of the Department of Health. And that includes the oversight of the grant program operations. These funding reductions don't affect the number of grant dollars. Those are separate, and we don't have the discretion to decide that we're going to keep back more grant dollars and use them at the Department of Health. We have very specific allotments for operations within the department and for grants that go out. And within the pot of money just for operations within the department, this would be a reduction to that.
Just for clarification, I'm trying to differentiate between the governor's, your request to governor's 1.1 and this bill saying 1.6. But this bill says 1.6, but all administrative, it's only an administrative amount in program. Are they the same? Is this a $500,000 difference? Or are they different?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, maybe you're calling my attention to something that I have not seen. I would assume that this $1.65 million reduction is an increase in the $1.1 million reduction that would go to MDH operations.
And Chair, I'm referring to the bill, item 3.3 to 3.10. In cuts in a manner that does not result in the loss of federal funds, all budget reductions must be made with an emphasis on cutting administrative and overhead expenses, including but not limited to outstate travel, in-state travel, compensation and supplies, with as little impact as possible on programs and services. Were those same restrictions inherent in the $1.1 million that you were going to do for the governor? Are we talking apples to apples?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, we are not. The governor allowed us much more discretion in how we would implement those reductions than this does. These are very specific guidelines that create potential conflicts in terms of the structural imbalance of operating the program within the department.
Madam Chair, so your agreement with the governor is to cut 1.1 at the discretion of the department. But this bill says you will cut 1.6, but you will do it categorically in salaries and administration expense. They are two different, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, that's correct.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you for coming in again today. Hopefully today will be a okay experience for you. I know one of the things that we were very concerned about was the amount of travel, in-state compensation. I appreciate Representative Peterson trying to put some focus on here that there may be an imbalance. But one of the issues that we wanted to be sure is that you don't cut the low-level employee that's actually doing on-the-ground work, and you look perhaps to some upper-level management. And I think your supplies budget, if I'm remembering correctly, was an exorbitant amount. And I think that there's some room in there for cuts. We also have invested an awful lot of money in almost every county in the state having access to video conferencing. I know we've used that a lot through the Department of Disability. And I would highly encourage you to take advantage of that of those programs that are already in place and perhaps exempt some of your travel and allow people to do video conferencing instead. We have programs that are already in existence. We've spent millions of dollars on upgrading and allowing for those things, and it would behoove you to perhaps take a look at some of that. And although I, again, appreciate Representative Peterson, and I don't usually disagree with him a lot, so I'm a little uncomfortable in doing that, I do think that the extra $500,000, you know, I'm not willing to take a piece of food from a hungry child so that we can keep an extra level manager. And I'm not willing to come back to have you tell me that we have to have somebody stay in a homeless shelter for another month because we can't find housing for them. So although I appreciate it's going to be difficult for you, we felt that we wanted you to have the intent here that this is to keep programs running, keep people safe, keep pregnant women fed and housed, and not rely on cutting low-level staff that are doing on-the-ground work. So for clarification for that, Madam Chair, that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, Representative Ledore, just to comment on your observation, all those things are important, and it would be the department's intent to maintain those base programs in every regard. However, in order to do that, we do need to have a structural management system which includes professional employees, clerical employees, supervisory employees, and management in order to maintain that structure. The vast majority of our work and our funding goes to on-the-ground endeavors. And the remainder, the $17 million I referred to before, really isn't that much in managing a $450 million organization. And in terms of video conferencing, I just do want to point out, I previously worked for the Department of Natural Resources, and not to toot this agency's horn, but the Department of Health has some of the most comprehensive video conferencing facilities mm-hmm. of any agency. We make great use of that, yep. And so we do manage to that effect. So thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So are you saying that it's going to be impossible to do this? Is that what you want to say?
Madam Chair, Representative Shumper, I don't know at this moment. I cannot say I know how we would do this.
Madam Chair, you don't know how you will do it. You mean I want it to be clear what you're saying or inferring. Are you saying it's going to be impossible to do this?
Madam Chair, Representative Shumper, I think impossible is a strong word. I think that to maintain the spirit of the language under 3.1 operating budget and to make a $1.7 million cut to administration and not violate the fact that it would result in any reduction in federal funds or any reduction in program capacity, I would testify today that I think that is more than challenging.
One, maybe I missed it, but how many employees in the Department of Health?
Madam Chair, Representative Shumper, there's about 1,300 employees.
The thing I'm getting at is that a lot of money, as you said earlier, is just flow-through money from the federal government, correct? I mean, it's not money that's probably already allocated to programs, and it's just a matter of passing it through from the federal into the state programs. I mean, it's pretty common. And so it doesn't seem like that type of process takes nearly as much administrative work as where you're dealing with, you know, original programs that are completely or wholly funded by the state. That's kind of what I was getting at.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Shumper, even though we bring in federal dollars and operate federal programs, sometimes through federal program models, the Department of Health is still the primary responsible agency for implementing those programs. Mm-hmm. And every year we face audits from both the federal government, the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and other state agencies to ensure that we're providing the correct oversight and attention to maintaining and managing those programs appropriately, and that those federal or state tax dollars are being used for the intent to which they were appropriated. And so in that vein, we need to make sure that we have the capacity to provide oversight to those programs. And it's not always possible to provide that oversight with the federal program dollars themselves. And that's the challenge we face.
No, I'm sorry.
President Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wanted to follow up just a little bit on the ongoing reduction that's in this budget. When we're talking about this budget at a 09 6% cut, it actually turns out to be about 10% of your administrative budget. That's a one-time cut at this point, but that's ongoing for you in follow-on bienniums. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, that's correct. These are base budget reductions, and so they would occur in 09 and in the 10-11 biennium as well.
And one follow-up, Madam Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
And I guess, you know, this discussion is good. I think this committee has been mandated with public health and housing, and public health being our ability to respond to different health risks within the state, of which, you know, we've been pretty judicious about all of the different interests that are throughout the state here. One of them is, you know, per se in Austin, in the meatpacking plant down there, the 3M, the waters over here, all of the different issues here. When we begin to erode the administrative capacity of the Department of Health here, we begin to have long-term effects, not just in this biennium, but in the ability for them to respond to future crises. So, Madam Chair, I would hope that we can take another look at this process and hopefully not chop them off at the knees and really do a disservice to the people of Minnesota for future protection under the Department of Health.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just concerned, Mr. Akam, right?
Yes.
Thank you. I'd like to know how these kind of cuts are going to affect the terrific work that the MPCA and the Department of Health has done to help our community deal with the water issue in South Washington County. I have no idea how those people can be pushed or reduced by the kind of percentages of cuts you're talking about and us expect to get the level of service that we expect when we have a crisis like we have and have had, and see the terrific work that these people are doing. I want to know what's the effect going to be on my community and how we're going to be served with this issue.
And Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, that's a fair question. And I can't specifically say today how these cuts would impact our ability in future events like what you're describing. Certainly, our ability to be responsive to emerging issues is a key to our success. And the flexibility that we have with the really minor amount of state funding is important to us. And I think that the Department of Health is a committed enough agency that we're always going to try to find a way to step up when a crisis or some other unexpected situation arises. But this will definitely make it more challenging.
Well,
Chair, I represent McNamara. The short answer would be yes. If these were individuals who were depending on general fund,
Representative McNamara, I believe the answer is yes. Most of our management and much of our supervisory structure is paid for through general fund dollars. And the purpose of that is that those are the individuals who have the oversight of the federal program dollars, and those can't always be paid for from the federal grants themselves.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a general comment from some of the testimony we had before. I have not heard of anyone on this committee who feels comfortable with any of these cuts, including the positive alternative program. But we were faced with a requirement to cut a considerable amount of money from our budget. And we were faced with issues of people who are literally in the streets of Minnesota who are hungry, and people who are out on the streets with nowhere to go. And we've gotten testimony in the past that we have as many as 100 people freezing to death on the streets of our communities. And I'd like to know, for those of us who have been told by others that we have more than enough money to take all the programs, discussions of $1 billion and $2 billion and $3 billion of dollars to be spent. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think what we're seeing here is the reality of that budget. And it's not pleasant to have to make these cuts. But political decisions have been made in the past, and now we're having to face up to them. And the question, I guess, that I'm sitting here wrestling with is, am I to vote for one program over another? What is the long-term consequences of these decisions we're making? And for me, if we have people who are hungry in the streets and people who are without a place to stay in a sub-zero weather in the state of Minnesota, or whether I'm going to reduce the funding for a program which possibly could be funded through private support, the religious organization I belong to, for example, takes half of all its contributions and uses that money for various social welfare programs, outreach programs. That's the reason I happen to be a member of that particular faith community. And for those who are concerned about this, I would suggest that they look to the faith communities in the state of Minnesota to see if we can't make up for some of this. But if we're not going to raise funds for any programs over and above what the budgetary limits are now, then we have to make cuts. And of course this is unpleasant, but this is the reality we're facing. So it's time to take the medicine, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. I will just comment.
Madam Chair, can I just... I'm sorry, I just want a point of clarification. Mr. Akam and Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, wasn't 3M asked to pick up some of the costs for that testing? I would hate to have anybody here walk off the committee table to go and say that we're cutting efforts to test water. My understanding is that 3M was asked to pick up some of the charge for that. Is that correct? And did, in fact, they contribute to the cost for that?
Madam Chair, Representative Madore, coming to the table is John Stein, who
yes, Mr. Stein.
I'm sure can speak more eloquently about.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, John Stein, Director of Environmental Health and Minnesota Department of Health, Representative Madore. 3M reached a settlement agreement with the Pollution Control Agency and agreed to pay certain costs associated with investigations at three contaminated sites in Washington County. Most of those dollars paid in Department of Health terms, paid for the water sampling, the actual costs of evaluating what's in the water, in the groundwater from these various wells that were sampled, over 1,100 wells sampled last year. Cost of those samples ran about $400 per sample, so that's, you can do the math and come up with the cost that it actually paid our agency to do, to run the sample analysis. Mr. Akam was correct earlier in response to Representative McNamara's question about the staff response. The staff that we have in our division that works on this problem, our toxicologists, our site assessment unit personnel, about a group of about eight people, are completely funded on the general fund. They are not funded by our fee-based programs, which come through our SGSR account. Division-wide, our budget is, for our environmental health division, is about 8% general fund dollars. So it's significant funding that the general fund pays our toxicologists, our site assessment personnel, and the folks who get out and work in the community. So just one division's example of how the general fund dollars are used. And Mr. Akam was correct, it does pay my salary.
Well, we certainly like you, Mr. Stein, right?
Madam Chair, can I just ask one more question?
I'm sorry.
Some of us have to be in other committees.
I know. I'm very sorry. I'm also wondering, as far as the Austin plant goes, was there any request made of that meatpacking facility to pick up some of the costs for this investigation? And if not, why not? And if so, did it cover the cost of the investigation?
Madam Chair, Representative Madore, I know that there have been a number of partners in helping to pay for various costs associated with that, including the QPP organization, who stepped up to the plate almost immediately to provide personal protective equipment, translation services, helped identify and track down many of the workers, and they do have a worker population, some of whom are migrants and difficult to find, and they did that at their own cost.
Okay.
Other organizations, including Mayo, the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab, and others, did partner with us to help pay for some of those costs. But I don't believe that they formally have offered a payment structure like 3M did.
And Madam Chair, my last question to that then is, you know, given that again we have a governor that really wants to be sure that users pay their fair share, is it a policy of the department to first look to the user, which would have been this Austin meatpacking plant, to look to covering the cost for this? Because it's an identified location, the company is the one that's absorbed. I mean, have we made it a point of being sure that user fees are being assessed to users?
Madam Chair, Representative Madore, not to speak too much to that specific investigation, but while it was at a specific location, we don't know the specific cause, and we don't know that it was related to the plant necessarily. There have been other indications that the condition that affected those workers has appeared at other locations throughout the U.S., and the investigation is ongoing. So I think at this point it was early to identify a specific responsible party in that case.
Thank you very much. The motion is before us. Is it the DE2 amendment?
I would, Madam Chair.
recommend the pass. We will be looking at some amendments after that. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That prevails, and the bill is before us. The next amendment is a technical one, and it looks like it's really long, but apparently the only change is what's on page one. And my understanding is this is to make it clear that we're talking about a one-time appropriation. We're talking about the A4 amendment. A4 amendment.
E2
deals with the long-term homeless program to make it clear that it's a one-time appropriation and it's available until it's extended. And the rest of the language is just repeat apparently what we have to do when we change the writing. So, any discussion on the amendment? Not.
Madam Chair. Yep, and just to this amendment, and as the Department of Health was up here testifying, and I asked them, this is the reduction in their budget that is ongoing. This appropriation, as we had in committee, was limited to 1 year because we were looking at some alternative means of increasing the amount of tax credit to businesses that were willing to contribute. So this will, in essence, take that one-time appropriation, but the ongoing monies that are going to be basically given up by the Department of Health will be added out in the biennium. So they lose that money in the outgoing years. And this amendment may seem like it fixes this 2009 provision, but it leaves a hole in the out years. Just so we know what we're voting on.
Okay, the amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 No.
Fails, and we now have passed Amendment A4. We'll see other amendments in the packet. There's about four of them. This one is amendment I'd like to just bring forward. This is just to bring the bill that we've laid over, the baby products bill, into this omnibus bill. It's the A5. We just thought we might have a separate omnibus bill in the committee, but we're just going to have this one bill. So we've had a lot of discussion on this, a lot of information. Nothing has changed the bill as it was discussed. What is the next one?
I'm hiding here.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, Sarah, I would just like a roll call on the A5.
Sure.
Roll
call requested. Let's just do the discussion. Let's take a roll.
Clark?
Yes.
Anderson?
No.
Benson?
Aye.
Lane?
Aye.
Dorr?
Aye.
McFarland?
No.
McNamara?
No.
Cole?
Yes.
Morgan?
Yes.
Peterson?
Aye.
Severson?
No.
Schumper?
Yes.
Okay. The bill passes 8-4. Excuse me.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Now we have before us the A7 amendment.
I'd like to, at the end of the all of our amendments, when the final bill is before us, I'd like to have a roll call on the final bill.
Sure. Okay, the A7 amendment, and who's moving that one? Is it Anderson, is that your amendment? I'm calling you.
Yes, I'll take the final A7 amendment.
Tell us what it does.
Well, Madam Chair, if you look on DE2, on basically the back part of the last page, we're talking with the Department of Health and saying that they basically you're asking a grant program, which is the Positive Abortion Alternatives Program, to be combined with just a website for the Women's Right to Know program, and it's almost an impossibility for that to be done. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to have that deleted so that we don't try and mix, it's almost like mixing apples and oranges together, and I'd like to have a roll call on that.
For the discussion, Representative Medora.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and I again would urge members to vote no on the amendment. Basically, what this is asking is there's an established website that's already being run. The MCCO organizer here testified that this was something they supported in legislation to have passed through. Basically, we are not trying to eliminate a right to a woman to find out other alternatives to what they're saying, her only alternative being abortion, which in fact I do not believe in, but I will go ahead and support their position on that for the sake of this amendment. What we're doing is we're saying that website exists, it's already in the Department of Health, they already are required to supervise it, there is staff there, there is additional dollars now, perhaps they can look at using the internet to broadcast their message. We don't necessarily need to be supporting programs that again take away from programs that are already being funded throughout the state. So I would ask members to please, you know, we are in a budget crisis at this point, and looking for alternatives for communications. This is perfectly reasonable. The website, they have generic information to both. I think it's a very reasonable outreach opportunity for them, and I would hope that they would embrace it. I think that it's a great way for them to get their message out.
For the discussion on the A7 amendment.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, in this committee last year, we had some additions to the budget, and we had some good programs on there. Men Enable was one of those programs where the budget had in his provision about $600,000, I believe. And this committee ended up cutting a major portion out of that. And Representative Medora spoke vehemently against that on the House floor. That went into action. That is one of the processes in which we began to bring some rational thought to this whole abortion issue. This is another provision, and this bill has been very aggressive in going after positive alternatives, taking $1.6 million out of that provision, leaving with $500,000, basically gutting the proposal. And not only that, but last year when there was an increase in the budget, that was taken away. So this has been a systematic attack on getting the information out to women who need the help. Women, just as you said, Representative Medora, need to feed their babies. And this program is one of those that does it. And if we get rid of the funding that you're talking about doing here and then do some consolidation on the website here, we are doing our best to take away the educational process for women who are in a crisis situation and take away all of the underpinnings that we have put up for the last 3 to 4 years. And this is just another part of that. And I would ask you to support this amendment to take that particular provision out.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Representative Severson. I do not consider this to be a systematic attack. The fact of the matter is this program did not come into being until 2005. This is not a program that has a long-standing involvement in the community. It's frankly a faith-based organization that's come to the state looking for dollars. I think at this point there is a program that's available. There's a website that's available. There's no startup cost virtually at all for them to move over operations and support the website. This still gives women the right to have information about whether or not they want to continue with their pregnancies on their Right to Know site, and also positive alternatives to that. There are many faith-based organizations that we can use as referrals on this website. If that's not appropriate, I would highly recommend, and I would highly hope, that we would again go back to the methods with which we are already funding here in our state budget, and that is through our counties. If a pregnant woman walks in the door in crisis, the first thing she's asked is, do you have insurance? The next thing she's told that we have an S-CHIP program that's been gutted at the federal level that is used to pay for MA for pregnant women. We immediately get that woman signed onto that program, and she is sent off to a doctor's office for an exam. That's where the ultrasound can happen. That's where she can get information about whether or not this pregnancy is something she wants to continue with. That's where those conversations can happen. It does not require us to take $2 million from hungry women and children and families and tell them that if you come here and walk into this building, we're going to solve your problem. You don't. There's a requirement that the counties already fund these programs. I would highly encourage the group to turn around and say, you know, perhaps what we need to do is to put women back where they need to go to get help. They walk in the door to their county services, they get insurance, they get assistance on food stamps, they get access to WIC. They are given the services that they need to be successful. And that's where I would like to see our dollars stay. Perhaps in 2 years or 4 years, when we have more money, we can come back and say, okay, we want to fund faith-based organizations. But right now, we are in a budget crisis, and I am not going to tell a woman that she cannot get food at WIC and medical attention so that I can continue to fund a program that, quite honestly, doesn't serve any real purpose when a county is already there doing the job. So, again, members, I urge you to vote no.
Yes, Madam Chair, I just have a question to ask about who's going to pay for doing this consolidation. We're cutting the Department of Health staff and their budget, and then we're cutting positive alternatives. Where's the money going to come from to do the consolidation?
You know, I just want to make a comment about this cutting the Department of Health staff. We asked them to cut two very high-level employees and said they were the new ones, because they said the programs that they wanted to cut, which included, you know, fetal alcohol and youth tobacco and all that, were the new programs. So we use the same principle. And what's left to be cut is about two what's left after that's, those positions are removed is $220,000, which probably is a couple of employees. So I'm not quite sure what, you know, we shouldn't be having a worry that the health department is being gutted of its employees. The business employees made two, possibly three, depending on whether they made 60, 70, 80,000. I don't know what those folks make. So I just wanted to say that. But the last final thing I'll say about that is we have invited the commissioner several times to come to the committee to talk with us about her ideas, and she's not come. Okay, did you have another comment? I think we need to vote on this amendment. And there's a roll call.
Clark.
No.
Anderson.
Yes.
Benson.
No.
Lane.
No.
Fedora.
No.
McNamara.
Yes.
McFarland.
Yes.
Mo.
No.
Morgan.
No.
Peterson.
Yes.
Severson.
Yes.
Shumper.
No.
No prevail, 75. The amendment is not passed. The next amendment before us is the A8 amendment.
And that's my amendment, Madam Chair.
Stevenson, you want to explain your amendment?
And as we had the Department of Health come up and testify a little bit, you know, gives us a pretty good picture of the magnitude of the cut that this is going to take on the department, even taking into account what the chair has talked about the two positions. I think what we basically said is Department of Health, we're in a budget-crunching situation, so we're going to micromanage your department. In fact, we're not just going to tell you that you have to reduce your budget. We're going to tell you how you're going to do that. And, Madam Chair and members, I don't know of anybody here, and I may be wrong, who has worked in the Department of Health for any protracted period of time, but I would venture to say that anybody that, you know, as a legislative body, wants to get into the business of a particular entity needs to live in that business for a while to determine what are the real effective cuts. We basically said you're going to do this, this, and this, maybe because two positions have just been added. But what do we know about the expertise of those individuals and what kind of knowledge they bring to the table? That, in concert with the cutting of the budget itself, I think we're going far-reaching as a legislative body into the business of a department rather than letting them manage themselves. So what this basically does in page 3, lines 1 and 10, it deletes the operating budget constraints as was previously discussed, and on page 10, line 11, deletes the two provisions that the provision that deals with the eliminating the two particular departments. Madam Chair, I request a roll call.
Okay. Any questions? Any further discussion?
The clerk will take the roll.
Clark.
No.
Anderson.
Yes.
Benson.
No.
Lane.
No.
Fedora.
No.
McFarland.
Yes.
McNamara.
Yes.
Mo.
Morgan.
No.
Peterson.
Yes.
Peterson.
Yes.
Schumper.
No.
Six to five.
No.
Motion failed, 6-5. Other amendment before us, the A9 amendment.
And that's my amendment as well, Madam Chair. Thank you. And members, we've talked about the positive alternatives. I think we've had some discussion on that. I think there's also some moderation. We can come to some compromise here. This amendment is bent towards that compromise. It takes the 1.9 from positive alternatives, takes it down to 1.282. And goes to page 11 and 12, basically taking the amounts that go to the appropriation for the food shelf program and replaces that with 310, and to the appropriation for long-term homeless and supportive services goes to 309. So basically there's compromise on both sides on this. Members, we've heard a lot tonight about faith-based initiatives. Really? Faith-based initiatives. If we're talking about the responsibility of the state, we're talking about infrastructure, we're talking about public safety. Department of Health is part of that public safety. If we're talking about feeding the homeless, community members, that's faith-based initiative. The state has stepped up to the plate where many religious organizations have fallen flat and begun to kick in and say, you know what, that's our responsibility as the general populace. Be that as it may, I will tell you, I believe that it's still the responsibility of the church to meet those needs. And when the state steps in, the church has stepped back. And so, members, I would say that as a spirit of compromise in this particular issue, if we come through with $619,000 for this for the homeless and for the food shelf, we have made that good step forward. And, members, I would ask for your support, and I'd request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just to respond to this, because I'm the author of the funding for the food shelf. First of all, philosophically, I agree that the state stepping in does tend to not let faith-based organizations off the hook, but they have all kinds of demands on themselves, and so sometimes maybe there's something to what you have to say. I would, however, want to emphasize the fact that the proposal we have, the original proposal, $619,000, already demonstrates a significant compromise in what is obviously a need, which is a proven need. We had $1.15 million, and we cut that to $619,000. And so, Madam Chair, I would just suggest that the compromise which we've already made is sufficient this time, considering the pressing need. And the organizations that have come to us and asked for these monies have clearly indicated that the need is so extreme, partly because of the decline in the economy, that I just cannot in good faith support a further cut in something that is so essential.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Madam Chair, I would just continue a little bit on Representative Benson's comments. It would be different if we were comparing programs of equally good benefit. But Representative Stevenson, I frankly don't agree with you that the Positive Alternatives Program is a positive. I think there's a lot of information out there that suggests that it's
That a fairly significant amount of this money has been subverted by groups that are really pressing their religious agenda. I've given each of you two handouts, written comments from people who went to these programs who really feel that they were misled by the information and assistance they got there. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that this program operates under very much oversight by the Department of Health. I don't believe there's any standard for the people who work there in terms of being licensed to practice ultrasounds or to provide ultrasounds. There seems to be not much in the way of reporting about these programs. So, in general, I don't think that this is a program that meets the quality controls that most of the programs under the Department of Health normally have. And so, I just don't see that we're cutting anything equivalent to the programs that that you're suggesting we should cut here.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And had I known that we were going to have some written testimony on how Positive Alternatives was not meeting the expectation, I just bring to attention this is 3105. That's almost 3 years ago, over 3 years ago. But I did attend a gathering. It was a fundraiser, actually, for one of the organizations, the tax-exempt organizations that this particular program works for. Alan Keyes was the guest speaker at it, and it was very well attended. People who wanted to get out in the community, and they're leveraging the dollars to go for this particular purpose, and they had some tremendous testimonies that make this, no more than a piece of dust. So I guess what I would like to say is this is not necessarily about the effectiveness of Positive Alternatives, because if it were, then we would have testimonies from both sides. This is more about cutting funding to existing programs that we have that we need to give a chance to get established here. If you're in fact wanting to cut them because of their performance, then let's have a study on it. Let's see how effective this thing is instead of just taking speculation and saying, I don't think they're doing the job. This provision, basically, the way we've got it in this bill is going to gut the program and cripple them to the point where I don't know that they're going to be able to perform. So if you really are serious about making sure that they are performing, then let's do a study. We're famous for doing studies in this place. So, okay. Madam Chair, I would request support for this particular amendment.
Thank you. The bill is before us. Is before us. The United Amendment. Take the roll.
Clark.
No.
Anderson.
Yes.
Benson.
No.
Lane.
No.
Doerr.
No.
McFarland.
Yes.
McNamara.
Yes.
Morgan.
No.
Peterson.
Yes.
Peterson.
Yes.
Shumper.
No.
Six to five, the motion does not pass. So. There's one more amendment in the packet, LA805, and who is offering that amendment?
Madam Chair.
Davidson.
Well.
our leader here.
Madam Chair and members, this amendment was brought to me by Representative Tinglestad. I will not do it justice, as she certainly can. She is a tireless advocate for the adoption process. She asked me to bring it to this committee. She was in support of another one. She really wants to see that this particular policy gets put into place. And I'll try and explain it the best I can. Madam Chair and members, this bill basically speaks to the adoption process, making it open adoption process that a large number of other states have already adopted. This does not preempt the wishes of the individual, whether the parents request to remain anonymous. If that is the case, then the child that is seeking the knowledge will not be able to attain that. Conversely, if the parents are trying to find out where the child is at, but the child does not want to be found, this also does that. So it advocates for both sides, but it does allow for a more open avenue for information through the adoption process. And I think it's a good provision. She's been working on this for a number of years. There have been no opponents to this bill come forth, so members, I would ask for your support.
Further discussion on this bill?
Yes, Representative Stevenson. Does it allow the birth parents to change their mind, say initially they don't want any contact, but 10 years down the road, can they solicit for the records that decision to be reversed?
Madam Chair, Representative Mendora, that's my understanding that it does.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I also want to strongly support this and thank Representative Stevenson for bringing this forward. I had some discussions with Representative Pinglestad about this because I had a particular problem in my district, and it's quite clear that Representative Pinglestad has gone to great efforts to work this out with many different groups here in the state over an extended period of time, and I really am glad we can help her out and include this. So I hope we'll all support this.
Any further discussion? If not, the amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion fails, and the amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Now the bill is before us, House File 3381, and a roll call has been requested. House File 3381 as amended, and it'll be the motion is to return it to finance. Any further discussion? If not, the clerk will take the roll on the bill.
Clark.
Yes.
Anderson.
No.
Benson.
Aye.
Lane.
Aye.
Doris.
Yes.
Farland.
No.
Beckman.
No.
Morgan.
Yes.
Peterson.
No.
Severson.
No.
Trumper.
Yes.
Vote is 6-5, the motion does prevail, and House File 3381 is passed and returned to finance. As amended and returned to finance. Thank you. With the minutes are before us for March 19th, Mrs. Lane, I know that you've read them. Move their adoption. For the discussion. If not, all those in favor signify by
aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. Members, we have a meeting tomorrow, I believe. 10? At the regular time. 10. I thank committee members and this meeting is adjourned.